Oh, I could listen to that kind of stuff all day long. That's Mario Bauza and his Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra with Tanga. This was his first jazz composition written in 1943. Mario Bauza was born in Havana, a child prodigy, taking early to the clarinet and then later to the trumpet, but became frustrated because in the Cuba that was then, Afro-Cubans couldn't go very far. But he was heavily influenced by the jazz and blues rhythms of America. And, of course, came to Harlem, the seat of it all, and proceeded to bring into fruition what we know now as Afro-Cuban jazz, and of course, grandfathered in something called salsa. So Mario Bauza is very, very dear to my heart, and this is one of his compositions that I really, really love and cherish. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Wednesday, May the 20th, 2015, and I'm feeling pretty good. I hope you are too. A couple of things that I want to bring to your attention because, you know, if you were to listen to the media, you'd think that all of these systems, and we talk about the systems of justice and the systems of governance and how fair-minded they are, how keen they are to make this a land of democracy where everybody is treated equally. So let me read you this little story today from Reuters. The headline, Major Banks Admit Guilt in Forex Probe, Fined $6 billion. All right, that's the headline. Here's the story. Four major banks pleaded guilty on Wednesday, that's today, to trying to manipulate foreign exchange rates, and six banks were fined a total of nearly $6 billion in a settlement that substantially ends a global probe into misconduct in the $5 trillion a day market. In total, authorities in the United States and Europe have fined seven banks over $10 billion for failing to stop their Forex traders, Forex meaning foreign exchange traders, from sharing confidential information about client orders and coordinating trades to boost their own profits. Traders at Citigroup, JP Morgan, Barclays, and Royal Bank of Scotland, who described themselves as the cartel, used an invitation-only electronic chat room and coded language to manipulate the price of U.S. dollars and euros between December 2007 and January 2013, according to U.S. authorities. The four banks pleaded guilty to conspiring to manipulate the foreign exchange market. The misconduct occurred after regulators had started punishing banks for rigging the London Interbank Offered Rate, or LIBOR, an interest rate benchmark. The misconduct occurred. I like that. Britain's Barclays faced the biggest fine on Wednesday with a penalty of $2.4 billion, because it did not join in an earlier November settlement with British and some U.S. authorities due to complications with its regulator in New York. Barclays fired eight employees as part of its settlement, and New York Superintendent of Financial Services warned that it was still probing the bank's use of electronic systems for foreign exchange trading, which make up the vast majority of transactions in the market. Simply put, Barclays employees helped rig the foreign exchange market, They engaged in a brazen heads-I-win-tails-you-lose scheme to rip off their clients, Benjamin Losky said in a statement. While today's action concerns misconduct in spot trading, there is additional work ahead, unquote. Barclays had set aside $3.2 billion to cover any Forex-related settlement. Shares in the bank rose more than 2%. Swiss bank UBS, which avoided a guilty plea over the Forex debacle, pleaded guilty instead to one count of wire fraud and will pay a $203 million fine for its role in rigging LIBOR after its involvement in the Forex scandal breached an earlier DOJ, Department of Justice, agreement. Switzerland's largest bank also had to pay $342 million to the Federal Reserve over attempted manipulation of Forex rates. The U.S. Central Bank fined six banks for unsafe and unsound practices in the foreign exchange markets, including a $205 million fine for Bank of America, which, like UBS, avoided a guilty plea. UBS's penalty was lower than expected, and this contributed to a more than 3% rise in UBS shares to their highest level in 6.5 years. The global investigation into manipulation of foreign exchange rates has put the largely unregulated Forex market on a tighter leash and accelerated a push to automate trading. Authorities in South Africa announced this week they were opening their own probe. Transcripts of online chat rooms made public on Wednesday demonstrated the clubby, audacious nature of the dealing desks, with one employee at Barclays remarking, quote, "If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying," unquote. You see what I mean? Now, let's just analyze this for a moment. The banks are pleading guilty. Now, they're not fighting. We are guilty. They're pleading guilty. No one is going to jail. No one is specifically charged with a crime. But as long as they could cough up $6 billion among them, everybody walks. And it is not like this is the first time. This has been going on since December 2007, between 2007 and 2013. All right, so they call themselves the cartel. Do you understand what I'm talking about here? We are talking about institutions that are running a criminal, not just conspiracy, but enterprise, globally fixing foreign exchange rates so that they can manipulate it in order to derive higher profits. And even though they have pleaded guilty, their shares have risen on the stock market. This is the level of corruption and greed and craziness that is going on. But because they have the wherewithal, they can just play the money. Look, if you can pay $6 billion, it means you have it in the first place. And you certainly, $6 billion is nothing compared to the money you really have. So the Justice Department, that is supposed to be about lopping heads off right about now, and we should have been seeing a long line of bank executives in front of some kind of a judge somewhere, entering their pleas to a laundry list of offenses, nobody gets busted. Nobody has to contend with a trial. Nobody is going to go to jail. Nobody has even been charged. The banks, I should say, have been charged. So the lesson here is, and this is where America is, and this is why people are so fed up. This is incredible, given the fact we have the same Justice Department that can't figure out how to convict or how to even indict police officers for wrongdoing. But here you have people literally operating like any drug cartel, calling themselves the cartel, and washing all kinds of money, trillions of dollars. What did they say? This is the level at which they're operating. $5 trillion a day. And this gives them the authority and permission to do as they please. And they've been doing it for 6 years. Admitting only today, and this is, they admit this, this is also part of the negotiation with the banks and the Justice Department. Okay, well, what would you agree to plead to? We'll take one count, all right? We'll just say we're guilty of one count, and we'll pay up the money and move forward. Here's the other thing. Now, one would have imagined, especially since this is an international problem, an international crime of major proportions, that the offending banks would have lost their charters. That's the way you're supposed to do it. You are able to operate as a bank or a financial institution by federal charter. And of course, in the international arena, by international charter. In other words, you agree to abide by certain rules as a financial institution. And when you break those rules, just like in any other profession, you revoke your license. You yield your license. You lose your license. Here we have a story, and they're telling it. They're not hiding this stuff anymore because they can't. But even the news services covering this, and we'll get to that in a minute. But the idea is, here are banks. They're pleading guilty to a major, major, major crime. They're not denying that they have done this. Between 2007 and 2013, in a $5 trillion a day market, all they were required to do as part of negotiations and agreement with the Justice Department is pay up the money and everybody walks. And we want you to promise never to do this again. You've been bad. And now you should just tell us you're not going to do this anymore. But you can walk. Everybody walks. Nobody gets busted. You compare that to a woman in New York City who, she was walking her dog, black woman, walking her dog, and she just momentarily had the leash. The leash was on the ground. And before she could pick it up, she gets a ticket for having an unleashed dog. She forgets a court date, or she doesn't show up on the court date, and she's facing jail time for having an unleashed dog. We have people in a $5 trillion a day market making tons of money as part of a conspiracy, not unlike any other criminal enterprise. And all they have to do with the Justice Department, this is the highest level of law enforcement in the country, and they're sitting around the table, they're the lawyers and whatnot, and the Justice Department's lawyers, and they're sitting down having nice little chats about how best to solve this, what they call now, these are indiscretions. How did they call them? Misconduct. This is not a crime anymore. It's now been downgraded. This is just misconduct. They're misbehaving themselves, these bankers. And they agree today, they announced today that they have agreed. And they're still trying to palm this off as severe punishment. They will pay $6 billion. Well, if you made a couple of trillion dollars, $6 billion is a piece of cake. Let's take one of these banks. Let's take a look at my favorite here. You look at J.P. Morgan, and this is just a couple of years ago. How many infractions, I'm going to go with the low-grade term, not crimes, how many things they have done, been busted for, and agreed to pay fines for? J.P. Morgan. In 2011, they were fined $153.6 million for misleading the government and the financial regulatory agencies on investments. 2011. They also paid, or were fined, $228 million for anti-competitive conduct in municipal bonds. Right? 2012, fined $5.29 billion for foreclosure abuses. 2012, fined $269.9 million for mortgage misrepresentation. 2013, fined $1.8 billion for improper foreclosures. 2013, fined $410 million for a scandal relating to electricity trading. In 2013, fined $389 million for illegal credit card practices. Okay. In 2013, fined $920 million in trying to cover up fraud, massive losses in a trading portfolio. In 2013, fined $5.1 billion in the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac housing scandal here in the United States. 2013, you see how long the list is going? 2013, fined $4.5 billion for institutional mortgage securities practices. In 2013, fined $13 billion for misleading the government and regulatory agencies on toxic mortgages. 2013, fined $108 million for this LIBOR rigging scandal, that which is where they're part of that cartel. In 2014, You remember Mr. Madoff, Bernie Madoff? Well, J.P. Morgan was at the center of that. They were fined $1.7 billion in connection with the Madoff scandal. 2014, fined $1.34 billion in connection with this issue that we're just raising here. And this is just one bank, and this is J.P. Morgan. And this is a bank, if you go by what that list I just rattled off to you about the fines that they have paid, which means that there's some reason to believe that they were culpable for the crimes committed, it means that by logic, this is an institution that cannot be trusted to do its job and to hold to the basic tenets under which for which they have a charter. Any institution, any financial institution with a record like this, obviously should lose its charter. And the purpose of the federal government and its regulatory agencies should be to protect the integrity of the charter and the consumers, of course, who are going to be hurt by any institution that functions this way, to shut them down. Shut them down and cart all responsible people off to jail. That's what you're supposed to do. But the institution that should do that, the government that should do that, is actually finding them, and I've rattled off to you how many millions and hundreds of millions and billions of dollars they've had to pay in fines in just a matter, it's just in the last 3 years, really. If we were to go for a 10-year list, we'd be here till next week. And still they have a charter. And still they're doing business. And still the government is saying, nobody goes to jail. Just pay the fines and be good to go. So the moral here, the lesson here is, if you have the money, you could do just about anything and get away with it. And the banks seem to be exempt from prosecution. The Justice Department, even when a bank says, yes, you got me, I am guilty, I did it. We are the cartel, we are the drug lords of the banking world. We did this. And the response from the Justice Department and the regulatory agencies is, just pay us, write a check, and be good to go. That tells you something. But they aren't the only ones allowed to walk. Not at all. Just yesterday, what did we learn in good old St. Louis, Missouri? Well, we learned that a prosecutor decided all by herself that there just will not be any basis for a criminal indictment of a police officer for shooting an unarmed black man. So the way they do that these days, and they learn best, of course, from the Justice Department, is you put out a report. You just kind of put out a report. In this case, she put out a 51-page report explaining why. In her view, and her view alone, which is the only view that matters, according to her, the conduct of the police officer, whom she did not name in this report, she refused to name him, but she says in the report, the unnamed officer, who by the way, is Michael Slager, S-L-A-G-E-R, the officer's actions, in her view, did not rise to the level of criminality. Therefore, there is to be no indictment or prosecution or even arrest for any criminal act in his shooting to death von Derek Myers back in October. It was just about 2 months after Michael Brown was killed in nearby Ferguson. So what does she do? She does what the Justice Department does. Writes a report. Oh, it's a terrible thing that these things are happening. However, the police officer's action just does not rise to the level of criminal conduct. A. This is not supposed to be her decision. This is a decision that belongs to a grand jury. So she decides that she is a grand jury, all by herself. B. The question about criminality is not to be determined by her. Her job is, in the face of probable cause for an arrest, to effect the arrest and to begin the process and have the grand jury determine whether this actually rose to the level of criminality, and to indict or not indict based on a process. But you see, St. Louis Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce decides that she was independently going to undertake her own investigation because she's a law unto herself in St. Louis, and she can determine by herself that there was no reason to indict this police officer. And so, Officer Slagle is not indicted. Well, if you want proof, there is her 51-page report. So what the prosecutor has decided is to usher in a new kind of justice system. It doesn't have to follow the book. The new kind of justice system, and of course, we know that Eric Holder, the former U.S. Attorney General, had done exactly the same thing. Rather than proceed according to the law, you create a new procedure. And the procedure is, if you write a report, it is as good as the law, or if maybe even better than the law, and it should suffice. Because I am the chief prosecutor in these parts, and in my head, this does not rise to the level of criminality. The hell with the law. I am the law. I'll give you a report. And the report will follow the tradition, just like in the banking situation, the tradition. You got busted. We know you did it. But if you could pay your way out, you walk your way out. In St. Louis, no prosecutor is willing to take on the task as mandated by the law. We saw that even the U.S. Attorney General wasn't willing to do it. But he wrote a report. And then he took off. And the people of Ferguson, Missouri are left to figure it out. Let the chips fall where they may. He's done his job as far as he could see it. He already said it ahead of time. The pursuit of any criminal indictment against Darren Wilson, the officer, the former officer who shot and killed Michael Brown, was going to rise to such a high level of proof that it was practically impossible to achieve. So ahead of that, here's a report that says he's not going to be indicted. We're not going to proceed, and we're not going to pursue criminal indictment of this officer. So two systems of justice here, and they're both the same thing. the banksters understand that they are exempt from the law, and the Justice Department understands its role. It is not there to really regulate and prosecute these wrongdoers, the drug cartel of the banking world. It is there to partner with them. And if you can pay your way out, you walk your way out. The prosecutors, and we see in Staten Island, Daniel Donovan, who was supposed to have been the prosecutor in the Eric Garner case, he's now a congressman. No indictment in the Garner case. There never was going to be one. That's the understanding. That's the foregone conclusion. So when these people get up and they tell you all these things and they recite all these useless phrases about justice for all and in the interest of justice and all that, there is no justice. There is a way in which the powerful, the well-connected, the wealthy, they have their own little world that they operate in, and they know the rules. Everybody is abiding by the rules, and they play according to a whole different set of rules than those rules that apply to you and me and the woman with the unleashed dog. She's facing real jail time in New York City because there is the law. And the law must be obeyed. Yeah, well, I think we should, from time to time, remind ourselves that we should actually just turn our ears off when we hear useless phrases like that, because we know them to be lies. We know them to be complete fabrications, distortions of the truth. And we had two seemingly unconnected things, but really it's the same story. We'll take a break, come back to your fix when we hear this little bit more music from Mario Bavza. I could listen to that all day long. This is Utrice Lead. You're listening to PRN.FM, your favorite radio station, and you should spread the word. I'm depending on you to do that. It is Lead Stories on PRN. You know, on any given day, we could easily rattle off a long list of things we think are wrong with the country, the government, the system, even our fellow Americans. Politically speaking, it's par for the course, but the list gets a lot shorter if we're asked to suggest fixes to the things we think are wrong and are not working. So, here's your challenge today. I'd like you to identify what you consider a major national problem or nagging issue, and a specific way of solving it within a relatively short time. You got the assignment? What do you think is a major national issue? What do you see as a workable solution that can tackle and solve the problem within a fairly short time? This is your big fix. What is it? 888-874-4888. Oh, we have the first taker from Florida. Ray, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
And, hello.
I called before you posed your question, but I think I can still address it. But I was going to make a comment on the writings of Ellen Brown and everything you said about the banks. Because I archived a article she wrote in 2012 that was entitled "The JPM Derivatives Propping Up U.S. Debt, Why the Senate Won't Touch Jamie Dimon." And that goes to, you know, the fact that we think that these entities are separate from our government, but behind the scenes they're so entwined that these, you know, pittance fines that they're getting are really just a slap on the wrist. And, you know, 11 months out of the year it's a circle jerk, and then 1 month out of the year it's a circle slap. And then they go back, you know. So, but in terms of, I think it's, this is, people started to talk about this on PRN, and a national strike would really, I think, get the bankers' attention. What if one day a week everybody stayed home? What if you didn't even go to top off your gas tank? You didn't buy a beer at the 7-Eleven. You didn't order pay-per-view. No economic activity, let's say on Sunday. That would maybe make Wall Street sit up and notice. You know, it seems like a lot to imagine, but I think Gary Null suggested just a couple of days ago that that people of color should have their own strike in protest of all this police murdering, but it needs to be wider than that. I think Elizabeth Warren just the other day and Bernie Sanders, although I don't particularly admire Bernie, they sent a letter to the White House asking for the $15 an hour to be a nationwide minimum wage. And if nothing else, that serves that this notion is really getting some traction. So one way to maybe, you know, hit it home would be for people to not participate in the economy on an organized basis and then see what concessions can be wrung out of that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for contributing. Okay. Especially, you gave us a twofer here today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that.
All right, bye.
From New York, Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Eutrice. So
hello.
Good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
I say ditto to the last call-up in terms of a general strike. And as for the police violence, police state, we really need to define community policing as white guys who are coming from, live outside the community. They cannot be a part of the police that's in the black community. Now, I know that might sound somewhat outlandish, but I think we need to start somewhere along there.
But why wouldn't they? Why shouldn't they be?
Well, they obviously are so racist and biased. And my concern is in around Frederick Gray, have you noticed that the three sadistic, racist, brutal police officers who insisted on taking off Freddie to jail for no reason, it wasn't against the law to have a penknife, and somehow it became a rough ride. So we need to get your thoughts on that at some point and bring on Alton, because they're targeting the black driver of the van. And when he was taken out of the van and shackled and what else happened, that would have been those other officers. So that's a diversion. And so we need to see the racist, sadistic, out of control, outrageous white police living outside the community as a big problem and solve it.
So is it the human factor, or is it the system within which they work and the culture of that system that informs their action?
Well, it's both, because there is definitely a type of culture that black officers have to seem to subscribe to when they become part of the blue. So, yes, that's a part of the problem, too. But that would get their attention when we demand that they stay in there. We're hyper-police to begin with. Murphy, the attorney for Frederick Gray's family, did a nice little clip. Maybe you can play it in a later program, where he gave a shortened version of the history, and it included Reagan bringing on five times of the police in the black community, and that's also part of the problem, the hyper-policing, the broken windows. It's outrageous that when the most innocent or whatever casual encounter can wind up with somebody, one of us dead, that they would have broken windows in New York City. How crazy can it get?
All right. Thank you so much for your contribution today.
Thank you.
From Queens, we have Chris. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
I actually agree with the previous gentleman who called and said about the, I mean, it was a very general statement, but you asked a specific question.
Yes.
And I was just thinking, I wasn't sure how I was going to answer it, but if one had to just be very just general about it, I would say it would be not participating in the economy. But I'd like to ask you a question. I'd like to just speak for a minute about, you were mentioning Citigroup and the four banks. I heard that, I believe, yesterday, and I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. I would like to know what happened to Goldman Sachs and these four banks here, because you know why? Goldman Sachs, it's interesting to me. I have followed Goldman Sachs from 2008 when the market crashed. I really am very, one might say, regarding Wall Street and all the hedge funders, it really wasn't my domain. I was never interested in it. I'm not an investor. And I can balance my checkbook, and I'm very aware of a lot of things. It's just something that I really didn't understand, you know. And I think many people don't understand it, because unless you're in those groups, if you know, in a hedge fund or you're on Wall Street in a certain capacity, you really have a hard time understanding even a lot of this terminology that they use, you know. And I was just wondering what happened to Goldman Sachs, because if you look at Goldman Sachs has nurtured and put out into the world all of these government people who are, you know, including in the European, for example, like the, what's his name, Draghi in Italy, who is the head of the central, of the bank in Italy, and they're all Goldman Sachs, proteges or whatever, okay? They all worked for Goldman Sachs at some point or other. It was the same way that a few of the appointees that President Obama, okay? So I was just wondering, because a lot of this, like you asked the question, does anybody go to jail? And honestly, for me, if they would put Jamie Dimon in jail, or who is it with Citigroup, I really wouldn't be satisfied for the following reason. Because as it has happened, it seems to me in the last, especially 25, 30 years in America, in the United States justice system, they look for scapegoats. And by finding a scapegoat, that doesn't mean that the scapegoat is not guilty, but I mean they have one sort of, sacrifice to the gods, so to speak. And that's it. And people kind of, you know, turn around, they go back to watching their set and their little gadgets, and that's it. But you're really not dealing with the system when you're doing that. And so for me, it goes at a much deeper level than that. And the fact that the government and the Congress especially, because if you look at this a little deeper, it is these lawmakers, these people who are supposed to be our representatives, and we look at them as if they've descended from royalty. In fact, they work for us. You know, that sounds maybe a little corny to say, but it's just sometimes if we just stop and use our language the way we're supposed to use it and really listen to what it means, then you realize, you know what, this senator and this representative is my representative, and he's not speaking for me. And so ultimately, when you think about it, it is they carry a lot of the responsibility for a lot of at least the American-centered banks, what they did here and what Wall Street did.
But as well, the regulatory agencies. Look, in any profession,
absolutely.
If you were a doctor and you fell, you came afoul of whatever the regulations were, you would lose your license.
You'd
lose your business. These folks are still in business, and they are still in the business. So we have to raise these questions.
Can I have just one more minute?
Yes, you can.
I just need to put this out there. You know, Goldman Sachs got under my skin for the following reason. Greece is my family is Greek, and, you know, from when the crash happened in 2008, Greece became, I know Greece is not a very important country in the larger scheme of the world. It's a little country. There's 11 million people there. But it was used they got beat up in the schoolyard, so to speak, and this is not only by the American agencies, but by European as well, okay, primarily Germany. Anyway, it's a long story, but what was interesting was that Goldman Sachs played such a pivotal role in the fact that Greece crashed its economy, and it wasn't just because they had advised them how to present their so-called their GDP and their finances so they could enter the European Union, which was a big balloon because the European Union knew exactly where Greece stood, okay? But it wasn't only that, but Greece was the Goldman Sachs' client, and what they did was not only did they advise them for this, which was what the American press kept on focusing on, at the same time saying how profligate the country of Greece was, right? So as if no other country had ever overborrowed. Anyway, so what they did was they advised them to do a particular thing, and then they turned around and bet against them. In other words, they had their own, knowing very well where Greece was, knowing very well where, mm-hmm. you know, their bonds stood. And I can't get into the details because, very honestly, I'm a little bit, you know, I don't know the specifics of it, okay? But it struck me that any country, and when I would hear discussions here that the way they would refer to this country, and the way they would refer to the entire Greek population, that they were lazy and everything, it was just unlike anything that I've been familiar with in my life and in my own family. And in fact, if you look at the Greeks who come here, they're very, very successful as an ethnic group. And they're very progressive,
to explain.
You know.
The fact is that this is a world, they gave themselves the appropriate name. They are a cartel.
Yes, they like Chris Hedges said, it was a system of robbery, and that's exactly what they proceeded to do. But my point was this, that in a country like the United States, honestly, it doesn't even matter who was involved. The idea that they would justify a bank like Goldman Sachs, that they would turn around and bet against their own client, okay, without telling their client that they were going to bet against them and they were going to advise other investors to bet against them because they knew the situation of the country. I mean, just
sure,
think
because
about
that
minute.
Happens a lot, and this is why many financial firms lose their charters and licenses, because that is a profound abrogation of financial responsibility.
Exactly.
And they did it, obviously, because they were making money. You know, but that's what hedge funds are all about.
And the
that people are going down the tube. And if you know, you happen to have inside information, it's just like Hillary Clinton, you know, having a $10,000 investment become $100,000.
Right.
And people thinking, well, oh, it's probably because she's so brilliant. No, it's because somebody had inside information and knew how to transform a mere $10,000 into $100,000. Thanks so much, Chris, for your call today.
Thank you very much.
From New York. New York is winning today. What's going on? There's nobody else except Ray holding up the outside, the outskirts of the city of New York. But we have Nasheed on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Nasheed.
How you doing?
Fine, thank you.
I'm glad you're doing well. You sound good, and may the good Lord keep blessing you.
Thank you so much. Great support, and of course, I'm following Gary's rigorous protocols, so I'm in good shape.
That's good. I just was reading something on the hedge funds. I think it's way up in the $40 million, and then there was another fund for $6 million that was directed towards the governor of New York. to knock out the public schools. I think.
Well,
the more,
but what? Huh? So, what is your solution? What is the problem as you're seeing it? You continue to define the problem for us.
I think we just need some morality here. I mean, and then the
wait. What was that word you said then, Nasheed?
Morality.
What does? did you hear yourself say that word in connection with politics?
Yeah. Look, I mean, not only the morality there, but the African American population and the other, we're just being taken down to nothing. You know, they're not. And I'm not saying I'm aware of anything, but they're not aware. You can't have any conversation. It's all about basketball and football and all this kind of stuff. And we're getting knocked all over the head. I just don't understand it. There's some kind of morality. There's no leadership in the communities. So this is up and down across the country. You know, and
but
people move
the,
and they
your
go
task
somewhere else.
Is,
and, huh?
But your task today, Nasheed, is twofold. You've identified a problem. Now give us a solution you think might work in a fairly short time.
I think maybe, because I don't want to get into a whole, I think maybe the people just ought to listen to some of the speeches of Alhaj Malik Shabazz, and he knocked it right in. And sometimes you do the same thing. You deal with the situation the way it has to be done, and the people don't want to deal with it. They don't want to deal with it. So I don't have a solution, but our morality, how many brothers and sisters are in jail? I mean, we got jails from Sing Sing all the way up in New York. I mean, there's jails all over the place. And I went past the parole officers this morning. I thought it was a hit movie out there. That's how many people's on parole.
Wow. Thanks, Nasheed, for your call. We'll have to continue that conversation. It's a necessary conversation, and we have to do what you suggest. We have to face it head on. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
I would have to say the same thing that Marge said. I'm so glad to hear your voice.
Thank you so much, Ali.
Yes, I'm gonna say this. You know what we had to do? We had to shut it down. The whole system. And I'm not talking about just the system, the bank system. This is a criminal enterprise, and that is what it is. And I'm just going to tell you this real quick because we don't have a lot of time. And the reason that I had to tell you this, because the whole thing is like a spider web, okay? And that's why the way that you explain it, you explained the bank system, the criminal enterprise, and then you went into what happened in Ferguson and Baltimore. The fact of the matter is that everything starts in this country with race. And if you take a look, this criminal enterprise is controlled by one race, one group of people, and one group of people only. And it's not going to change unless the system we take down the whole system. And the reason that I had to explain this real quick to you is that on Thursday, I was in court in Brooklyn. Then I went to court again yesterday. On Thursday, the reason why I was there for people to know is because on April 14, one of the organizations that I belong to, Stop Mass Incarceration, we called the day, A14, shut it down. About 42 people got arrested. Most of the people that got arrested, they were white kids, a lot of them, from the high school system, high schoolers in this city. We had to give them court support, so we have to go there every time that they get called. So I was there Thursday. This is what I did Thursday. When I was online waiting to get into the court, I counted, including myself, how many people were standing in front of me. There were 36 people. And from that 36 people, only four people were white. And the white people that they were standing in line were, they were Eastern European, and I believe two they were Eastern Europeans, and the other two they were, because I heard them speak, Russian, okay? So the rest, they were black and Latinos, the majority of black people. So you tell me how we're going to fix the system when it's telling us that it's in Brooklyn where you have Bay Ridge, a place that most white people live, Park Slope. Do these people, they ever commit a crime? Do they ever commit a crime? How come these people, they not reflect the majority of the population in New York City? So what I'm talking about is racism. How can from 36 people, and the reason that I'm saying this because I was just counting the people, and I think to myself, how can this be possible that I'm standing online, and including myself, 36 people, only four people you see the white, and they're not even Americans. Okay? So this is the whole thing with the bank system. If the people like Jamie Dimon set up the rules for the bank, and then he breaks them, he knows they're already the rules. So therefore, those are the people that are in charge. Obamacare was set off by the health care system. So when they break the rule, again, it's the same system. They know what they're doing, so they're going to correct the system. So the whole thing has to, we have to take it down. And I mean it.
Thank you so much. We'll have to leave it there for today, Ali. And I hope you could develop it a bit more on Friday for Free Your Mind Friday, because we need to continue the conversation. But that brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it gave you some reason to ponder things or reponder things. Keep it right here, coming up next, right here on PRN. I really, really love the station. NDC Savings Club is next. You want to stay tuned. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Education is on the menu.